Blog. Are you all the way in? Get ready for you. It's All the Way in Radio with your host, Deborah E. Lake. Recognize, claim, and live fully in your life through All the Way in Radio. Have complete confidence that you will succeed. Be fully invested in your life and in your happiness. All the way in radio.
I like that.
Change begins now.
Hello, this is All the Way in Radio, where you learn how to let the words of negative people roll away like water from a duck's back. I am Deborah E. Lake. And today we are going to continue the conversation about abortion from the personal side. Now, we're not here to talk about whether or not abortion is right or wrong. There are plenty of people doing that now. What I am doing with these shows is providing space for women who are involved with the process to talk about what it's like to be involved and to go through that process. Instead, you will hear from people who are actually doing it rather than debating whether or not it's right or wrong. So, with me tonight is Karina Gura from the Pro-Life Action League. Karina, I want to welcome you to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you're here to talk about a topic that is difficult to talk about. We're all over the place on this, and sometimes it's been not so friendly conversation.
Right.
So I want to tone it down, and let's just talk about the process and what it's like, right? So I want to start with you telling our listeners about you and your organization. Let's start there.
Okay. Well, I am 26 years old. I have a master's degree in communications, and I've worked for the Pro-Life Action League for 2 years now. The league was formed 30 years ago as a direct action activist organization. So we focus less on the politics, less on trying to get certain legislation passed, and more on getting people out onto the streets to do things to teach people about abortion. And so, yeah, we'll be celebrating our 30th anniversary coming up. And the two main projects that we've come to focus on in these last 30 years are sidewalk counseling and Face the Truth tours. So today we know we're going to be talking about sidewalk counseling, but the one other project that we do spend a lot of time on are showing graphic photos of abortion out on the streets.
Yeah, I've seen them. Yeah.
It can definitely be controversial, but that's the other project that we do.
I have seen those, and I have some thoughts about that. I'd like to talk with you about that as well. Tell me, how did you get started with this work? How did you, what motivates you?
Right, so I was, I remember, you know, I grew up in Chicago, and I remember going to the Museum of Science and Industry. And there they have a fetal development display of babies that were stillborn. And they show babies all through the gestational stages. So, you know, starting with the little tiny blastocyst to the embryo to the fetus to a full-term child. And I remember looking at those when I was little, and I always knew that that was a baby, you know, that that was something that I could see because I could see the way that fetus grew. And so I've always felt that way since I was very little. And when I was in high school, my dad and I would volunteer at the Lake County Right to Life booth, and we would show the fetal development models and pass out literature and things. And we actually, he saw in the newspaper that the Pro-Life Action League was going to be coming through with these graphic photos and watch out. You know, it was a local newspaper warning us to stay away from that part of town at that specific time. So my dad was like, oh, that sounds interesting. That sounds like our kind of a thing. And so that was the first or maybe second year that the league did that tour. And we've been involved with them on a volunteer basis ever since. And
oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. That's.
I don't want to cut you off. I just want to make sure you have you complete your thought.
Yep, that's really, that's all there was to it, is that we've been volunteering with them since that first time that we were sort of warned to stay away.
What has struck me with what you just said is that your father got, it sounds like your father is the one who really introduced you into this, the work that you're doing now. Is that correct?
We started doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Lake County Right to Life booth was something. It's been a good experience for us. We've been doing that for like the last 10 or 12 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And every summer we take an evening together and we work on, you know, we work at the booth together.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes for some interesting conversations and just some good experience to bond together with each other.
Yeah. One of the things that I have found, and I've done work as well in around the issue of abortion, some activists and some just counseling women and talking with women. But one of the things that I have found is that for the majority of the time, the most vocal people, for the most part, were men. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
Well, we are often criticized that most of the people in leadership positions when we do this Face the Truth tour are men. But one time I was holding the sign on the sidewalk because, you know, the sidewalk is really close to the edge of the road, so, you know, I didn't want to block the sidewalk, but, you know, so this man comes riding by in his bicycle, and he's, you know, in his 30s or whatever, and I was maybe 20 at the time, and he starts swearing at me because he'd had to swerve around me to get off, you know, to ride on the sidewalk, and he couldn't go on the sidewalk because my sign was there, and he starts swearing at me and getting all up in my face, and my dad just happened to be walking by. And he's 6'2", and then looked at the guy and said, you know, only children are allowed to ride on the sidewalks legally. And the guy immediately backed off and went away. And I had tried to explain to him that we had a right to be there, you know, tried to speak to him, but he just got up in my face and started screaming at me because he was bigger than me, because he was a man. And so part of the problem is the way society is so patriarchal. We have to have men in leadership positions so that when an issue comes up with somebody who's screaming and ranting and raving, that they'll listen and stop, you know, their ranting. So, you know, it is sort of just the problem with society that if we put only women in leadership positions and something like that comes up, some, you know, drunk person is screaming at us, they're not going to listen to a woman.
Oh, that's interesting that you think that. So I'm wondering what kind of impact you think that has on the women who are going into abortions clinics when men, given the fact that you say men are stronger and bigger and louder, and more scary. How do you think that impacts women who are trying to struggle with that?
You know, that's a Face the Truth tour that I was talking about there. When we do sidewalk counseling, it's more about trying to establish a personal relationship with that person going in a very brief amount of time. And more women do sidewalk counseling than men do. Because there, it's about trying to build a relationship. And, you know, women, at least in society, have been raised to be the ones who can do that better. And a woman who is terrified in going into an abortion clinic wants to identify with someone. So if you're young and she's young, there's a point that you can identify on. If you're both women, you can identify with that. If you can find out that you're both Christian or something like that, those are points that you can build a relationship on. And so a lot of women do sidewalk counseling for that reason, that you know, we like to have that identity. There are men that do sidewalk counseling, but it's not in the same way that a Face the Truth tour is. In a Face the Truth tour, you need to assert that we have a right to be here and to show these things. And the truth tours are not done in front of abortion clinics. So
mm-hmm.
you need to assert that we have a First Amendment right to be out there and to be present. And that's sort of a different, although we are confronted about whether it's legal to be out in front of an abortion clinic, it's a different sort of situation. And so we don't need men to take charge in the same way when we're in front of the clinics.
This is very interesting. Tell me about what do you mean by building a relationship through the sidewalk? What do you call it? Sidewalk.
Sidewalk counseling.
Counseling.
When
women are going in and out, or people are going to work, that kind of thing. What kind of relationship are you trying to establish?
Right. Well, first I want to distinguish that in the 1980s and early 90s, there were a lot of what they called clinic rescues, where people would arrive in groups of 300 and try to completely physically block the entrances to the clinics, or
yes,
maybe go in and destroy things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what people have, you know, in the image when I say I go out to the clinic or something like that. They're kind of like, wait, you do what? That is not what we do, that those kinds of things don't happen anymore, that there was a law passed in 1994 that,
What do you do now? That's what I want to get to.
Right.
So
now what we do is we stand at sort of near the entrance of the clinic. Sometimes people stand a little bit further off so they can walk with the women towards the entrance. But usually you're standing at the entrance to the clinic, and you have materials. The Chicago method, which was pioneered by the Pro-Life Action League, is to show the lawsuits that have been filed against that clinic. So to show that this is not a safe place, that that there's this assumption that every doctor's office is, you know, completely safe. But there are people who do research, you know, I want to go do the best heart surgeon, I want to go, and you look and do medical malpractice suits. So what we've done for these women is to look into the medical malpractice suits and to see what kinds of problems there are. And so we tell them this is not a safe place. And then we offer them an alternative that has no lawsuits against it, a place where they can get free pregnancy tests, free ultrasounds, a lot of material resources like diapers and maternity clothes, and they can help them with, you know, getting onto public aid or whatever kind of things that they need. And so it's to offer an alternative place that they can go, a place that we believe is safer, that will
so
care for
them. Why is it important for you to, I mean, I understand outreach, okay,
mm-hmm.
But with the internet and things like that, and there's another question I want to raise as well. Why is it important for you to go out? Because by the time a woman has made an appointment and is walking into a clinic, she's made a decision about that clinic.
Actually, a lot of women haven't. And a lot of the women from the post-abortion groups that have
Wait, just one second. Why is it important for you to go out there face-to-face rather than other ways? We have the internet, we have television,
right.
We have materials that you can make available to our organizations, and that type of thing that's not so in your face.
Mm-hmm. Well, the surveys of women that are post-abortive, that have post-abortion syndrome or suffer trauma after they're having the abortion, a large percentage of those women say that when they went to the abortion clinic, they were still hoping to be presented with alternatives. So they were hoping that their counselor would talk to them and give them, you know, this isn't the only way. This isn't
okay,
the only
way. Okay, then I have a question. Then that is a way to empower women. If they are not getting what they need, then one way to do that would be to empower them to say, you can ask for what you need.
Well, and that's
ask
and that
questions
is one of the,
rather than wait for someone to give you the information.
Well, and so when we stand outside, we believe offering that, you know, that counter to the choice that abortion is not the only choice, and so we try to tell them that they can have help if they want to parent or if they want to place their child for adoption, that we don't believe that they'll be getting it inside, and so we try to offer it to them outside. It's just a last minute, you know, remember that this is not the only thing that's available to you. And
well,
I do wish that...
I have another question about along those lines. Has your organization done anything to collaborate with abortion clinics to provide that information rather than descending, for lack of a better word, is how it looks. So you descend on women as they walk in and out. You could collaborate with abortion clinics to provide that information that you say you want to give them.
Well, I do know that there is a law that's currently being proposed.
Has your organization done that is what I wanted to know.
Well, hang on. Let me. There's a law called the Ultrasound Opportunity Act. And it says that an abortion clinic should ask a woman if she wants to see the ultrasound when they perform it. And I would be very shocked if the abortion clinics were willing to go along with that.
So
that's
you,
something that my organization...
Have you done any outreach to abortion clinics is what I'm asking, to provide information?
Not specifically. My organization hasn't.
Okay.
My boss, Joe Scheidler, has had lunch meetings. It used to be a lot easier for him back in the 70s and the 80s, but he used to meet with abortion clinic doctors, or the doctors who performed abortions,
mm-hmm.
and he tried to one-on-one convert them to help them see that there are alternative ways to help these women and
mm-hmm.
that providing abortions are not the way to do it. And so he has a number of people. He started recording his memoirs and telling his stories of meeting with these different doctors. So, it's something, though, that they won't meet with him anymore. When he tries to do it, they won't meet with him anymore.
Okay, I can understand you saying that. And one of the things that I want to do, and I really do appreciate you coming on, is because
mm-hmm.
I want to really raise some questions and raise some issues that are out there but not really being talked about. So I really do. I'm appreciative of you hanging in there with me, and I might push you even a little more with some more questions. But right now, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Okay.
Okay.
Isn't that John and Rachel over there?
I thought they broke up.
Broke up? When?
A while back. John looks good.
Why wouldn't he? Who told you they broke up?
Rachel did.
Well, maybe she was just talking, venting.
No, Rachel found that John had HIV, and she was going to leave him.
What? HIV?
Yeah, she was worried that she had it too, but her test came back negative. I wonder what made her change her mind. Maybe...
What?
Well, when my brother told me he had HIV, he gave me a book. Said it would help us talk. You remember. The title was Your Neighbor Has AIDS.
Oh yeah, I read that too.
And when Rachel told me about John, I asked her not to make any decisions until she'd read it.
That was smart. That book helped you and your brother.
Yeah, and what I learned helped me talk with Mom, too.
You think that made a difference for them?
I'd bet money on it, and you know I'm not a betting woman.
But you are a great sis and good friend.
Your Neighbor Has AIDS by Deborah E. Lake is available at DeborahELake.com, Amazon.com, and select bookstores.
Okay, we are back after that short little break, and we're continuing the conversation about abortion on the personal side. And I'm here with my guest, Karina Gura. Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yes.
From the Pro-Life Action League. Now, you mentioned in the earlier segment, you mentioned about the safety of the abortion clinics. Tell me more
mm-hmm.
about what you mean by that.
Okay. Well, another thing that my boss did when he first got started was to, to look into some of the safety issues of abortion clinics, and it ended up becoming a series in the Sun-Times in, I believe, the 80s called The Abortion Profiteers. And they did a series on how these clinics were dirty, how they were dangerous, how, the doctors were pushing people through too quickly, things like that. And so that's been something that we've focused on at the League since our founding, is trying to make sure that these places do have rise up to common medical standards. But because of the way abortion is a political issue, that a pro-choice legislator doesn't want to look like he or she is trying to restrict abortion by passing any sorts of restrictions. And so they'll vote no on common sense measures like making sure that the place is clean, making sure that the doctor has certain medical standards and safety issues, that you, that you can't operate on a woman without making sure she's sedated or safe, something like
so
that.
So you have proof that that's happening?
Not nowadays. We don't have proof, but, definitely.
Is that part of your outreach still?
It is, just to point out that these women should ask to meet their doctor before the abortion is performed, that they don't have to sign any paperwork that says they promise not to sue if something goes wrong, that they need to know that they have a right to say no to those kinds of things, that, that they do have rights. What other practice would you not meet your doctor before you're sedated and out cold?
Do you know for a fact that that's happening?
Mm-hmm. That there are reports on Yelp.com that I saw at various Chicago abortion clinics where they say that you don't meet the doctor until you're sedated already. Or we've heard that from women who've had abortions and come back and talk to us afterwards. And so we want to let them know that they have a right to ask for those sorts of things.
Well,
and if they do ask, I believe that the clinic will comply. So,
and also, the clinic is also under JCO standards, where they come in every 2 years, I think, just like in hospitals and other places that provide medical care and surgery and things like
but
that.
But they don't have the same rules. So even though they have somebody come through and look for it, perhaps, they don't have the same rules, even as a veterinary clinic does. Because, like I said, those pro-choice legislators don't want to be seen as, you know, stopping a woman's right to have an abortion. There was a clinic on the East Coast that closed recently, and they said that there were fetuses in jars on the desk of the abortionist and that there was blood all over the walls. It was I'm forgetting what it was. I know my coworker wrote about it on our blog maybe a month ago, and Jill Stanek talked about it on her blog as well, but that, you know, this place was not a clean place. There was blood all over it.
Okay,
and
well, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that because part of my experience is in the medical field, and I do know that there are standards and that are universal across the board when we are doing medical procedures. And I'm going to disagree with you on that one. So
I'm telling you what they found when they went into this abortion clinic that had been closed. So that's what they found.
Okay, well, that is interesting. And if that's going on, then that certainly should be brought out and in today's time frame. And I would like to know any kind of information that you have that's
Yeah, I'm trying to get my computer started up now so I can find out the name of the doctor. If we want to move on, I can find it once it gets started.
Oh, you can send it to me later if you like.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and talk about what happened just yesterday, the passage of the health care bill. How do you see that? You know, there was a lot of discussion about abortion.
Right.
There was a split in the Democratic Party. Some were threatening not to sign because of some language around abortion. So what are your thoughts about it now that it's been passed? They got the votes and they passed it through. How do you think
my understanding is it's not a done deal and that the Senate still has to approve it again. Is that what you've heard as well?
Actually, no. What I heard was it's headed to President Obama's desk to be signed.
Okay, well, I'm not sure about that. But so either way, I mean, I definitely believe all people deserve health care and that, you know, it's important that we try for this. I'm still not convinced that the government is the best way to go about this. I think there are a lot of social service agencies that do, you know, provide good service for, you know, for cheaper or, you know, more, that they use the resources more wisely.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure about that. But in terms of abortion, you know, when it was being paid for by the government, women were turning to it in mass quantities, and thousands more abortions were being done while this was, you know, while they were being paid for. And because I believe that every abortion is the destruction of a human being, anything that increases the number of abortions that are being done is something that does disturb me. And I'm not sure, you know, with this new compromise with President Obama signing an executive order to promise
no
funding.
He hasn't quite signed it yet. He's from what I understand, that's going to happen. There's some kind
right.
of deal that he's
signed. Right. So with his assurance that there will be this executive order to go along with the bill, you know, from what I know about political communication and things that I've studied, an executive order is overturned the moment you sign a new executive order.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has no lasting, it doesn't last the way that a bill does. A bill needs to have a new bill replace it.
Mm-hmm.
But an executive order is, you know, the president or the next president can sign just a new piece of paper saying something. So, you know, I wouldn't count on that to be, you know, if that was the only thing that was keeping me alive, I guess I would be kind of doubtful of this executive order.
Mm-hmm.
But I like the fact that the organization that I work with is not rooted and tied to political issues and bills in the same way that some of the other Right to Life organizations are,
mm-hmm.
because I believe that it's important to be an activist, to go out there and to try to educate people myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to put all my eggs into the basket of hoping that my representative votes for or against a certain bill, but I can get out there and teach people and have conversations with people and teach them about abortion myself,
mm-hmm.
and I like that aspect of my work.
Okay. You're giving me a good segue because I would like to talk about, I've seen these big billboards driving through cities and with pictures of aborted fetuses on them, very graphic.
On a large billboard?
Yeah, on trucks riding around.
Okay,
does that have anything to do with your, is that what you do, your organization?
We don't have any, they call them truth trucks is what the people who have them call them.
Mm-hmm.
And no, we don't have any trucks or anything like that. We have four, five foot signs. We have signs that are 4 or 5 feet tall that we do display along the sides of the street. We go to busy intersections. And mostly we're in Chicago. We've taken it to Indiana and to South Dakota and other places. But when we show them, we always have warning signs that say warning graphic abortion photos ahead. And we place them at a place where there's a major intersection and a person could turn and go a different way if they didn't want their children.
Well, here's a question that I have. I have young grandchildren, and those kind of pictures were jarring to me. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about how that affects people in general, but also children who might pass by and see this. What are your thoughts about that?
We do place warning signs so people can turn if they choose to, but we also have children who show those graphic photos and are out there with their parents.
What do you think about that?
Well, I think that the children are most upset by their parents' reaction, and so when they see that their parents are extremely upset by what they see, that upsets the children.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a book called Who Broke the Baby, and the story behind the title of it is a little child who saw these photos and said, "Who broke the baby?" That they understand something that we don't sometimes because we've become too intellectual, that the fetus is, you know, just another stage of development, that will, if allowed to, continue to grow. That is a baby. And so the children know that somebody hurt that child and that we're out there to protect him or her. They don't need to know all the details about what happened, but that these children are being hurt and that we want to help them.
But
and
one of the things that you're doing is putting it right out there where anyone, including children, that you're claiming to protect, where they can see it and not really have the capacity to intellectualize or say, okay, I'm going to turn. It's there, immediate, and
yeah,
it's right
there. That's what I'm saying. Is that the children understand that those babies are being hurt, that they don't need to understand all of the intellectual facets of the argument to know that that's a child that was hurt.
I'm going to push you just a little bit on this because I don't know if you've seen any kind of horror movie. Have you seen any kind of a horror movie?
Sure.
They can be, especially now, they're quite graphic, and I, as an adult, don't watch them. They're too much for me. I wouldn't put a child in front of the television and say, "Well, you know this is wrong in your heart, so you know you can deal with it." That's what I'm talking about. How?
Okay, but so the horror movie has these complex scenes where you see people being ripped apart and blood flying everywhere. We're not making children sit down and watch an abortion being performed.
No, but you're doing the next thing to it. There's
We're
some pretty
showing
graphic
a picture
pictures
of a baby.
Out there.
The ones that we show are baby Malachi, and he has been pieced back together. You can see that his limbs have been torn off, so you know that he's broken. We show a baby where his head has been torn off, and they know that child is hurt. But
okay.
I don't think that it hurts them in the long run. I think that knowing that other people are out there hurting babies, that does make them sad, and they want to do what they can to help us stop it.
You don't think that's using children?
To say that we want to help your generation and they agree with us that babies shouldn't be hurt, I don't think that's using children, no. I think that's, the truth shall come from the mouths of babes is what the Bible tells us. And Christ used children as examples in some of his stories. But I don't think that's using them. It's understanding that they know something we don't know. That they're smart enough to know things that we have obfuscated in all of our intelligence as adults.
Very interesting. I'm finding this quite interesting, this conversation.
Good. You,
what I'm hearing you say is that young people know more than people who are older.
on certain issues, we lie to ourselves when we tell ourselves certain things. That children understand that that lying is wrong. And then the first time you see your parents do it, I remember when my dad, I was working for him. He does real estate appraisal, and somebody paid him twice for something. And he said, "Oh, it'll all just come out in the end. Don't worry about it." And I was horrified that my dad, who had taught me to never, ever lie, never, ever take money that shouldn't be taken from somebody else, he was just like, "Oh, don't worry about it," That as a child, I understood something that in all of his years of working, he had come to see that, well, they're not going to pay him for something in the future, so this will make up for it. But as a child, that shook me that he was lying about something. And so as you become an adult and you become older, you sort of allow the world to shape the way you view things. But as a child, you're focused on what is right and what is wrong.
Well, one of the things that I know is that as a child, you depend on the older people to protect you and to teach you what is right and wrong, and mostly to protect you so that you can become the person that you want to be or can be. And part of that is being able to explore and not be frightened or jarred or manipulated into thinking a particular way. And one of the things that I react to when I see just the pictures is a manipulation of emotions and innocence in a way that is disturbing, I think.
So do you believe that a Christian education would fall into the category of manipulation?
Well, I think those are two separate things.
Well, no, because for me they're related, because in a Christian education we teach that God was crucified, that Jesus was crucified. He was nailed to a cross. It was bloody. It was horrible.
Yeah,
it was
and that
painful.
Has done a lot to damage people, I think. A lot of people are not going into the churches. And
I think we have a fundamental disagreement then that we're never going to agree on.
Oh, yes, yes. And this is part of what I think is exciting, because to be able to sit down and talk about things and know that we disagree, but still be able to talk and have other people listen and come to their own conclusions without being traumatized and without having to choose right on the spot, that kind of thing. You can sit back and listen and take in what they want to take in, go away, process it, and come back and come to their own conclusions. That's empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I like about this conversation. And like I said, I'm glad that you're here. So let's move to here. I want to ask you a question. The process I want to talk about process. The process of going out and talking with people about whether or not they should have an abortion, that process, how has that changed you? How does it inform your life, your personal life? Tell us about the process of actually going out there, because I've done something like that, I can tell you. I started a nonprofit, and we had a campaign where we talked about homosexuality and homophobia being spewed out from the pulpit, and we went out on the street and gave out information about what some of the pastors were saying to incite people to hate from the pulpit. So I understand it, and I can talk about that process, but that's not what we're here to talk about. I want to talk about what it's like to make the decision to go out and talk on the street to people who are struggling and trying to make a decision about something that's very difficult.
Right, so you're talking about specifically while we're in front of the abortion clinics?
I'm talking about the whole process.
Okay, well,
it's not just that one moment. You have to make the decision. You have to decide how you're going to approach this person. You have to think about what you're going to say and weigh the impact of your words, all of that.
But I'm just asking, when you're talking about when I go out to counsel do the sidewalk counseling rather than when I'm just talking to
exactly.
the regular person
exactly.
on the street.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, there's definitely a spiritual battle involved when you're laying in bed and you know that it's, you know, 10 degrees outside and here you're warm and cozy and you need to make yourself get out of bed and put on your 3 layers of socks and your toe warmers and your 3 layers of pants. And there's that part of you that wonders, am I a little crazy to be going through all of this and doing all of this?
Mm-hmm.
And Satan's like, yeah, you're crazy. Go back to bed. And so you have to brush that aside and know that, or at least believe that what you're doing is going to have a positive impact on somebody's life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then when you get down to the clinic and you're freezing, there's a lot of prayer. And, you know, we made a specific book for helping people to focus on the unborn children and the mothers and, you know, and the fathers as well while we're out there to focus ourselves and to ask that those people are protected, ask that they are able to change their minds and choose life if that's God's will, to remember that those children now have somebody to mourn their passing. And when a woman is going into the clinic, then, you know, like I said, we're offering an alternative. And so that's the thing that keeps me going, is knowing that these women don't always know they have another choice, that someone in their life has been pressuring them to have an abortion oftentimes, and that they begin to exclude other thoughts, that, you know, that they don't know that there's people who can help them parent their child. They don't know there's places that will, you know, help them place their child for an adoption and, you know, like places they can live while they're waiting to place their child for adoption. And so that keeps me going, knowing that we are making it a choice. You know, if we're going to say that you're pro-choice, then there does need to be that. And so to know that that's the thing that I can do, that, you know, I may not be able to sit down and try to get Planned Parenthood to start offering real education in the way that I would deem it to be considered, you know, informed consent law or something like that, but that I can stand up there and I can be that balance. That
so what I'm hearing you say is that you focus on the message rather than the person.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the way the message is spoken is different based on each person, but the message is always the same, that there's an alternative available. But you need to speak to each person differently. You need to, you know, to see what it is that she's terrified about and why is she going there. Is she going there because she's convinced if she tells her parents she has an abortion that they'll kick her out onto the street? That you have to handle that differently than the woman that I spoke to who just didn't want her coworkers to know she was pregnant. That is a very different situation. Or a girl who already has several children and is, you know, worried about having another one. The message is always the same, that there's an alternative, but the way that you explain it and the way that you interact is different based on each person.
Hmm. Interesting. So the reason I say that is because one of the things I didn't hear come from you is just part of what we've been covering, talking with women who have been through making the decision, and they made different decisions because, like I said, I'm not about doing a show pushing one or the other. I like to give all of the information that's out there, as messy as it is, and as controversial as it is, and as difficult as it is to get to the message and get it out. That's what I want to do. I'm not trying to promote one or the other. But one of the things that I do know is that there is an intense struggle that women go through regardless of what they finally decide. And when they feel pressured to make one decision versus the other, or when they feel as though they're being told that you want to choose life, that kind of language, and they feel invisible. Their struggle is invisible. And another thing that I've, and this is from women who have been through that process or helped women through the process. And the other thing that is very evident as I go through this, and I knew this to start with, but this also brings it out, is no matter what they decide, they're changed. And there's regret on both sides. Regardless, there's regret and sadness, and they have to grieve, regardless of what the decision is. So I'm wondering how much energy is put into helping women with that process rather than promoting a particular agenda. Because that's the one message that's coming out. They want people who will help them with their process rather than tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm. And when we do the sidewalk counseling, if we have a woman who stops and talks to us, or if somebody calls our office or something like that, we're always trying to pass them to a pregnancy resource center. And those resource centers have counselors who are trained in helping these women, think through what would be best for them and what would work best for them. And they're never going to refer for abortions at these centers that we would send them to. But obviously if a woman was already at the abortion clinic, she already knows, where she goes. She doesn't need a referral for that. But they help her figure out why it is she feels one thing is her only option.
Don't you understand it? What I'm saying is that this is not me talking. What I'm saying is, it is me talking, but it's not me. What I'm saying
right.
is what I heard from the stories that we've covered is that when you have an agenda, and the fact that you say that they won't refer to an abortion clinic, that's saying they have an agenda. When they have an agenda, they feel invisible. Women feel invisible and shut down.
Unfortunately, I think the way human beings are, we always have an opinion. That's sort of the way it is to be human.
Opinion is one thing, but an agenda is something different.
I'm sorry that they feel invisible, that the people that I've worked with are all very specifically worried about the people that they're working with, that they're concerned about, that, when Shannon meets with somebody, that she is trying to figure out why she feels so scared. And that's not an agenda. That's trying to understand a human being. Why does she feel scared? Why does she feel like she, needs to go to this place? So that's trying to understand her as an individual. And maybe you would call it an agenda to say that we don't want her to make this decision, but when I believe that that's the worst decision you could make, that it would ruin your life forever, then, I'm going to be biased against it.
Yeah,
it's
that's what makes them feel invisible. And I'm wondering if you understand that. If you can understand
that. It's out of preservation for her. I can't understand how anybody could not have an agenda when I feel it's going to hurt them so badly to do it. I wouldn't let my brother cut off his leg. I have an agenda. I'm not going to let him cut off his leg because I know it would ruin his life.
Okay. Okay. All right. I get you. I understand. I understand what you're saying. This has been an interesting conversation, I have to say. It has been. I knew it would
good.
Be.
I hope that there's some people who, go and take things and think about it from here.
Well, I have to say that we also are running low on time. And I guess I want to ask you to say something to women who are considering their options.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say?
I would
that
say
you haven't already said.
Mm-hmm. That abortion is often billed as something that will be over immediately, and that you'll be able to move on and go past it. But like you said, women need to grieve after, placing a baby for adoption or. And in our society, it doesn't allow a place for grieving for women who've had abortions. And so there's an organization called Rachel's Vineyard. It's also called Project Rachel in certain places. And that if you have had an abortion and that you feel that that wasn't the best thing for you, that, you can go and check out Project Rachel and see, talk to somebody. That would be the thing I would like to mention.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for being here with me and for hanging in there with the conversation. I really appreciate it.
Sure. And I'll send you an email about the stuff that we were talking about the abortion clinic.
I would appreciate that very much. I would.
All right.
Thank you so much.
I have a great day. God bless.
God bless. That's all I have for today. And I want to thank you for listening. And my next show will be Friday, March the 26th at 5:30 Central Time. And this will be the last in the series of our conversation about the personal side of abortion. In the meantime, why don't you stay connected and let me know what you think. You can email me at All the Way In at DeborahELake.com. This is All the Way In Radio, and we record live and uncensored. I'm Deborah E. Lake, here to let you know that you can recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Until next time, world.
This has been All the Way In Radio. Remember, be all the way in your life. Until next time, get connected at allthewayin.org. While you're there, check out our resource section. It will help you recognize, claim, and live fully in your life. Become part of All the Way In and have full access to special discounts and programs. Visit allthewayin.org for details. Take All the Way In Radio wherever you go through iTunes. Questions or comments? Ideas for future shows? Email them to info@allthewayin.org. All the Way In Radio is a production of Lake Enterprise. Audio production by Marcy Height. Creative consultation, Design House. Music by Andre Morganoff and Gautam.